Next case for argument, O'Connor versus Flores, Mr. Schoenfield.
Good morning, Your Honor. Can I please the court? John O'Connor stopped at a red light, fell asleep. His foot was on the brake, the car didn't move, there was no accident. Officers then approached him and woke him up. But all he did wrong was to doze off at a red light. For that, he should have gotten a traffic ticket, posted his license as a bond, and gone on his way. The actual consequences turned out to be he is arrested on two drug felony charges, spends from Friday until Sunday in the county jail, waiting to post a $100,000 bond, and is eventually out a couple of thousand dollars between the bond retention and his attorney's fees on the drug charges. Let me note there were no attorney's fees on the traffic court matter, which is not in dispute in this case. There were two things done which I think violated the Fourth Amendment. First, there was a search of the car, which was unreasonable and unjustified under any of the exceptions that allow car searches. And secondly, the seizure of Mr. O'Connor's person was also unreasonable.
Can I ask, suppose we agreed with you that he was not yet under custodial arrest at the time the officers decide to search the car. Nonetheless, they have found him asleep with the car in park. True, nothing happened. That's a bit of luck and a bit of luck, I think, that nothing happened. He's hard to wake up, and the officers think he may well be under the influence of something, you know, who knows what, drugs, alcohol, what have you. Now, there's a long line of cases that say if there's probable cause, officers can search a car anyway, even if the person is not under custodial arrest. In fact, there are so many such cases, I can hardly count them. So I'm wondering why this search of the car wasn't justified under that original set of facts that we all agree happened. And then, as is the case with lots of Fourth Amendment situations, it builds a step at a time. True, the officers turn out to be wrong about what's in the Ziploc bag and about what's in the little bottle of pills, but they don't have to be right to be able to take somebody in. They, each step of the way, they build probable cause. And I'm sure this was a horrible experience for Mr. O'Connor, but on the other hand, to hold officers personally responsible is a very significant thing to do, too. And we don't have a mistake-free legal system. So that's what I'm thinking about anyway with this case. You might
I think there's a twofold response, Your Honor, and let me mention at least the second one to begin with, which is even if the search was permissible, what they found did not create probable cause to be arresting him for any criminal offense. The first response, though, to Your Honor's question is the premise is that the officers justifiably thought that he was under the influence of something and that creates probable cause to search the car. There's two things wrong with that premise and that conclusion. The first is the premise. The officer's description of how Mr. O'Connor behaves after he wakes up is different than Mr. O'Connor's description. Mr. O'Connor essentially says, they woke me up, they asked me to get out of the car, I did. I did what they asked me to do. I moved under my own power. When they showed me my creatine, I told them that, I explained that that's creatine. In other words, he acted normally. He did not act like he was under the influence.
But those are disputed facts, and we really don't have to get to that in terms of summary judgment. There's no question he was asleep, and it was rush hour.
Yes, but being asleep,
Your
Honor.
And the officer changed the car to park. I think he doesn't dispute that either.
Right.
So somebody's leaning over him.
Didn't people start honking?
I think there was some statement by the officer that there was some honking. Yes.
Did Because it's one thing, I mean, people do unfortunately fall asleep at the wheel, but to fall asleep and not to be awakened by the honking of the furious people behind you is unusual.
Well, there's no description.
Fall into a deep sleep at a traffic light is a little odd.
Is it unusual? Yes, but is it probable cause that somebody's under the influence when they then wake up and act normally? Now, my response is no. My second response is, I don't know that any of us here...
I can see how you might think that the slowness of the person's reaction suggested that he, you know, was under the influence. Could be under the influence of a lawful drug. You could have an illness of some sort, but still could be reckless driving to allow yourself to drive in such a condition.
Well, the fact that the car never endangered anyone shows there was not reckless driving. But we're now debating whether the fact that somebody falls into apparently a fairly deep sleep is probable cause. I think at a minimum, it's a question of fact. Now, this is not, that's the other part of the procedural problem we have here. This is a summary judgment decision, and in a civil rights case such as this one.
But did he actually deny that he may have looked a little groggy when they woke him up?
He describes himself, and I can't quote, Your Honor, but he describes himself as responding to them, responding normally, getting out when they asked him to get out, walking on his own, engaging in conversation.
Well, they don't deny. The police didn't say he couldn't walk. They said he looked groggy.
Which would be consistent with having just been
awakened, I know, but it would be very suspicious, though. I mean,
what I find suspicious, Your Honor, with all
I mean, ordinarily, the policeman wakes you up. You know, you really wake up very, you become hyper-vigilant at that point. If you're still sleepy, you could see how they would think, you know, this person must have taken something.
That may be a debatable point, Your Honor, but it's a question of fact, and a fact that stands out here, I think.
No, I don't think it is a question of fact. That is to say, I don't think the fact that he reacted in a groggy manner is something that he's denied.
I think reading the transcripts indicates that he was not acting in a groggy manner once he was woken up by the officers, and had the officers...
But I just want to stick. We do agree, though, A, that he was asleep, B, that he was hard to wake up, that it was a few things happened before he actually remembers waking up. The honking, the police officers pulling up, pounding on the door, reaching in, changing the car to park. Eventually he wakes up, but I'm happy to stop there and not worry about anything he did or said after he gets out of the car. I think already the police officers might think, boy, this isn't your basic doze off for a second at the traffic light kind of guy. We better check to make sure he isn't driving under the influence of something. Maybe, as Judge Posner says, you know, he's taking antihistamines. I mean, all kinds of things can make you groggy.
They might wonder. No one, and I'm not trying to argue that there was no reason for suspicion, but I think there's also reason to suspect the credibility of these police officers while they attempt to make the case, defending themselves, that he appears to be under the influence of something. What's missing from their description? They don't act on the street like he's under the influence. They don't give him any sobriety test. They don't ask him to touch his nose. They don't ask him to walk a straight line. All the simple things officers do when they're thinking about a DUI.
But aren't they standing in the middle of Irving Park?
Was it wrong for them to look into the car?
It was wrong for them to search the car, yes, and according to...
What about just looking in? I mean, weren't these things in visible?
No, according to Mr. Ochana, they were inside his closed backpack. The officers claim it was plain view.
Right, right.
So on that level, we get back to the car search. And I think at a minimum, there's a question of fact as to whether there was probable cause to believe that he was under the influence. And even if there was such probable cause, you then get to another question of fact, in which I think reasonable people can disagree. If someone is under the influence, does that mean there's probable cause that drugs or alcohol are in the car? I don't think that usually they are, But I don't think that's something that's a matter of law. I think that's a matter of fact.
Police search cars all the time when they sniff a little scent of marijuana from a joint that somebody's been smoking. I mean, they have probable cause to think that the marijuana's in the car, and they search away.
Well, if you can smell evidence of the drugs near the in or around the car, I think that's different. There was no evidence here that they could smell evidence of alcohol or drugs.
That just goes to the quality of the probable cause. If you got over the probable cause threshold, whether it's because you smelled it or because of behavior or anything else, then can't you search?
If there's probable cause to leave contraband in the car, you can search, and I'm not suggesting otherwise. What I'm saying is that there wasn't, and that if there's questions of fact, even if one were to argue about whether there was probable cause on that level.
Okay.
I seem to have be out of time.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Schoenfield. Mr. Bosserman?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. It is uncontested that Mr. Olchana was found blocking traffic at the intersection of Irving Park Road and Costner Avenue. It is also uncontested that Mr. Olchana was blocking traffic in an active traffic lane because he had fallen hard asleep behind the wheel and that his car was in drive, but mercifully his foot was on the brake. A reasonable person would, after having observed this, have probable cause to believe that Mr. Olchana had committed a criminal offense. And a reasonable person similarly would have taken him into the police station because no reasonable person would have left Mr. Olchana in control of a vehicle after having observed him in that state.
And why wasn't he charged with driving under the influence?
Well, he was charged with obstructing traffic, which is, of course, a motor vehicle offense, and it was perfectly consistent with what the officers did observe, and Mr. Olchana ultimately received supervision and a $50 fine because of that.
But what about the field sobriety test? He wasn't given any of those.
No, he wasn't, Your Honor, but the officers were not required to. The officers had certainly enough evidence to reach a determination of probable cause based on what they saw Mr. Olchana do or how he acted in the car. Now, certainly a field sobriety test would have helped secure a conviction for driving under the influence, but this is only the probable cause stage, and certainly a lesser showing of evidence is necessary on that determination than there would be for a conviction. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What is creatine?
Creatine turns out to be a nutritional supplement of some sort which people use when they work out at a gym. But
widely used by young college men,
yes.
I will tell you.
Really? Weight training.
But the officers did not know what creatine was when they first found the package of creatine.
No, I understand. That's true. Now, do we know why Olchana was taking this synthroid-like substance?
Well, actually, we do. There was a motion in limine to this extent, and I believe that motion in limine granted. Mr. Olchana suffered, he suffered from Hodgkin's disease, so he had a thyroid condition which required him to take that medicine. But again, I believe that there was a motion in limine.
Would that make him sleepy, that Hodgkin's disease?
I believe Mr. Olchana testified in deposition that the Sinomel does make him sleepy. But again, the officers had no way of knowing this when they first happened upon Mr. Olchana and observed him. At that point,
think a thyroid supplement is not going to make you sleepy. It's the opposite. It's going to stir you up. I just wondered whether Hodgkin's disease, one of its symptoms is fatigue, if it interferes with your thyroid.
Well, my understanding is that Mr. Olchana happily was in remission, or is in remission from Hodgkin's disease, but he was taking the thyroid medication to keep his thyroid in some sort of equilibrium. I believe that Mr. Olchana testified it was either the Sinomel or the creatine that made him sleepy. He did testify that one or the other did. He testified to that in the record when he appeared in court on the traffic offense, and when he received a $50 fine and supervision.
Is his age in the record?
Yes, it is. Mr. Chana is a younger man. I forget his specific age, but I think he's either in his late 20s or early 30s. I would like to rest on my brief, actually, regarding the argument as to the search being justified and that the officers have probable...
What about the Knowles case? Distinguish that.
Knowles versus Iowa, Your Honor?
Yes.
Well, Knowles versus Iowa, the court determined that there's no such thing as a lawful search incident to a citation. That is, if the officers were to issue a citation, they cannot then search the car, even if they have probable cause to arrest the detainee. They reached that decision because the rationale for a search incident to an arrest did not exist when a citation is issued. But that's distinguishable here because the officers here did not issue a citation, and they testified that they had no intention of issuing a citation.
But does the arrest have any real relevance here? Isn't your point that there was probable cause to search the car?
Well, absolutely there was probable cause to search the car on three independent bases. One, as Judge Wood noted, once the officers observed Mr. Ochana in the state where he was, in his uncontested what kind of state he was in, once they observed that...
Well, no, there is a... There, according to your opponent, there's a disagreement as to whether he woke up, you know, and was perfectly alert, or whether he was still groggy.
But even if we were to take Mr. Ochana his word, and if he was not groggy after being awakened, the fact remains that he was hard asleep at the wheel for some time, certainly long enough for cars to honk, for the officers to pull up alongside him, to get out, to knock on the door, to reach in, to put the car into park, then to stir Mr. Ochana. This had to have taken quite a bit of time, and Mr. Ochana was not easily roused, and as this panel had already indicated, Mr. Ochana does not contest that. Now, certainly, given Mr. Ochana's condition, the officers have probable cause to believe that not only did he obstruct traffic, but that he had ingested some sort of substance and he was under the influence of that substance. Also, once the officers had probable cause that he was obstructing traffic and it determined they were going to arrest him on that charge, they could, of course, search Mr. Ochana's car incident to a lawful arrest, and that's what they testified that they did.
Right, but the problem with that is that, you know, what I kept thinking is, boy, if you were here on a Miranda claim, you would be saying right and left that they had not ripened into a custodial arrest yet by the time they started searching the car, that it was just more like a Terry stop, and, you know, we hear that all the time, and it seems to me there ought to be a consistent standard, and it strikes me that it was fairly preliminary up until the time they're searching the car. They've got him out of the car. He's back, and they're, whether he's alert and they're talking to him or he's groggy and they're talking to him, whatever, they've moved him down to the other end of the car, and that's when they start searching, before anything has happened to make us think that he's really in custody. If he had been talking to them, you'd be telling us that that was all admissible and there was no need for Miranda warnings.
Even taking that as true, Your Honor, the search of the car was inevitable. And it was inevitable on two independent grounds. One, Mr. Ochana's arrest was inevitable. Given the conditions that he was in and given what the officers testified, they were not going to let him go on his way. They were going to arrest him. So if the search happened too quickly, it was by a matter of seconds, if not minutes. It was bound to happen. And under the inevitable discovery doctrine, then the substances found in Mr. Ochana's backpack would be admissible. Second, even if Mr. Ochana were not to be arrested, the officers testified that they had no intention of letting him back into his car, and for good reason. So the car was in the middle of an intersection in active traffic lane. That car would be impounded. Even if Mr. Ochana was not going to be arrested, that car would be impounded. And if that car is impounded, then the police would have the inventory search. Absolutely. Once they perform that inventory search, what they do as a matter of course, through an impoundment, they would discover the substances in the backpack. So no matter how you look at it, the officers were bound to, they were destined to find the creatine in the bottle of Cinnabel. And based on that, the officers had probable cause not only to arrest an obstruction of traffic, but for all the charges that Mr. Ochana was ultimately charged with. But even if the officers only had probable cause to charge for obstruction of traffic and no other offense, which is Mr. Ochana's best case scenario, the officers would still win this case because there's no Fourth Amendment violation. To arrest Mr. Ochana, take him into custody, the officers needed probable cause for only one offense, and they had that, and it's uncontested. Mr. Ochana doesn't even contest that. There was probable cause to arrest for obstruction of traffic, and we know from Atwater that even on a traffic offense, which does not carry a penalty with any jail time, the officers can make a full custodial arrest.
But they would not have required him to put up a $100,000 bond, I assume, on an obstruction of traffic offense. Well, it, certainly the consequences of those other charges can't be wished out of this case.
Well, the consequences are tricky. First of all, the officers are not responsible for those consequences. The officers did not require Mr. Ochana to post a bond of any amount. That is for, that's a determination made by state's attorneys, by magistrate, perhaps by the watch commander. The point is, though, that Mr. Ochana has presented no evidence, I mean, no argument, that if the officers decided, if the police decided to hold him, and a determination was made to hold him until he could appear before a magistrate within 48 hours, which County of Riverside permits the city to do, that he would be detained for any shorter time if it were merely for the traffic offense. I see my time is up, and I would ask that this panel affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Boxman. Mr. Schoenfield, how much time? Are you, okay, but you, you may have a minute if you'd like.
The primary point that I'd like to make is that even if the search was permissible, as I said at the beginning, you get to the second question. The seizure of Mr. Ochana on the felony charges was not reasonable. The position taken by the defense here that any traffic, probable cause for any traffic offense immunizes officers from arresting on felonies, a blanket immunization is wrong. It is improper and it is dangerous. According to them, I can be 1 mile over the speed limit and they can arrest me for the Lindbergh kidnapping and I have no redress. That leads to very dangerous situations and absurd results and I don't believe is or should be the law. So you have a very substantial second question regardless of the search. I know my time is expired. I would like to mention very briefly that in the letter submitted by the defense with some supplemental authority with regard to the Supreme Court decision in Albright and Seventh Circuit's comments on that, that was not the most recent Seventh Circuit comments. There were also comments by the Seventh Circuit questioning the validity of the case, of the analysis of the case cited in the supplemental letter in Brokaw versus Mercer County, which actually is referring to Reed versus City of Chicago, which is 77F3rd 1049 at 1051-52.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument, Smith versus